London, 2 Portland Villas, 1920. The stairs seem so much steeper now, Catherine thought, gripping the banister to steady herself on her way down to her studio. But this was only one of the many subtle changes she had noted in the house since her return from France in May. Stepping into the house again, after those months of absence, she had been struck by how small the room seemed, how shabby the furniture, by the fine cracks threading the plaster molding round the doors, already in need of a new coat of paint. As the weeks had passed, the comfort of habit had not crept back to offset her sense of being out of place. Perhaps it was because strangers had lived there while she was away. Murray had rented out two rooms to help cover expenses. Upon her arrival, he had chased his lodgers out, but somehow their presence lingered in the atmosphere like an unpleasant odor. The first few days, she had taken stock of the things missing, broken, rearranged, the curious additions. That ugly brown teapot that dribbled from beneath the lid whenever one poured. Where had Murray come by that? And the faded red silk tie wadded up in the drawer of her bedside table. Who did that belong to? Her beloved Japanese doll, Ribney, had suffered a mysterious injury to one leg and had been relegated to a china cupboard where he clung mournfully to the handle of a chipped cream pitcher. Several books had vanished from the shelves, including a cherished volume of Shelley that had belonged to her mother. But these were all losses she could easily shrug off. Much graver ones were surely in store. For Murray, too, seemed changed. He had developed an unattractive stoop, despite the many sets of tennis he played with Brett. For hours every day he was out on the courts with her, panting and running and smashing the balls towards Brett's brown body as she pranced across the lawn, showing off her legs beneath her whirling white skirt. He came home sweating and humming, bellowed a greeting from the stairs, and disappeared into the bathroom for a long, invigorating shower bath. Over dinner in the evenings, when at last they met to talk, his eyes somehow seemed less transparent, as though a deposit of the finest sand had settled upon his cornea, filtering out a portion of the spectrum. Now that she was ill, she knew she must resign herself to the loss of his physical presence, the loss of his physical love. But his devotion, his mental companionship, his soul, whatever that might be, those she must continue to bind fast to herself, even at a distance. Let him have a love affair with Brett, or whomever he might choose, as long as he remained tied to her alone in his most secret self. That was the real meaning of their marriage, and the only thing that mattered. Down in the kitchen she heard Ida clattering away with the pots, and there came a ripish smell of onions and kidney. She stepped softly into the studio, snatched from her desk the little pasteboard sign inscribed, "Engaged," hung it on a nail outside the door, and shut the door firmly. This battle she had won, at least. No one, especially Ida, and not even Murray, was to disturb her when the sign was on the door. This was her time for herself. She went to the window and gazed out at the garden. This cool, wet August had plumped the blackberries on the bushes along the garden wall. She could almost taste their tartness with her eyes, but the leaves of the willows were edged in brown, signaling the end of summer. It would be time to wind herself up again for departure in a few days. Ida had already begun to pack their trunks. Ghosts of nightgowns and chemises, silk stockings and padded jackets were draped about Catherine's room, all needing some last-minute attention. A button fastened, a hem restitched, before being folded in tissue paper and placed in her trunk. All this packing, unpacking, assembling, disassembling. Was there never any end to it? She thought of those garments strewed about like the dead skins of a snake. With each journey, she shed selves, dreams, illusions. This time, on Dr. Soropar's advice, she was to stay away for 2 years so her lungs could thoroughly dry out. That odd expression doctors always used made her think of her lungs as rotting sponges on a shore, bleached by salt and sunlight, crusty with sand. If they did not heal completely this time, he warned, she might be forced to consider a period in a Swiss sanatorium. At that thought, all the devils within her rose up in rebellion. She could not bear the idea of a sanatorium. Her brief stay at the Hermitage had been enough. In a sanatorium, she would not be allowed to work. And if she could not work, she would die. And Jack agreed.